is preeminently the time to speak the truth, the whole truth, frankly and boldly. That the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Having a child with autism is one of the biggest challenges a parent has to face. At Autism Parenting Magazine, we know there are moments of sadness, anger, and exhaustion. Many times, you feel alone and need support from the autism community. That's why we created the award-winning Autism Parenting Magazine. Every month, we feature the latest coping strategies, therapies, and expert advice for autism parents to inspire and bring hope. Join over 37,000 readers today and get a free issue of Autism Parenting Magazine by going to autismparentingmagazine.com.
Welcome back to AutismRadio.org, home of the world's first autism support radio network and proud 501c3 charitable organization, helping families challenged with autism every day get services they desperately need. Please help us make a difference in the autism community and find it in your heart to support 1 in 88 families in America today. Donate directly at AutismDonation.org. Now, stay tuned for a special broadcast of Hope Saves the Day with autism activist, super dad, and author of The Spectrum Diet, master chef, and the Hope Man himself, your host, Paul Simmons.
Thank you for that great introduction. As always, it's great to be back on another edition of Hope Saves the Day. I'd like to let everybody know that that song was by Shelby LaBar, who was 15 years old at the time, wrote the story and the song with Richard Stripp, Mommy, I Wish. And today's guest is a very good friend of the show and wrote a very powerful book that really is an emotional, heart-rendering story. And at times, I found this book even hard to read. And for anyone who cares about children with special needs, it really is a special book. The book is called Mommy, I Wish I Could Tell You What They Did to Me in School Today. I'd like to welcome to the program our good friend, Richard Stripp, Sr.
Hi, Paul. How are you today?
Good, Rich. It's great to have you on with us today.
Oh, I'm honored to be on. Thank you so much for having me.
You know, this book is such a powerful tool, Rich. And, you know, it's like I said, at times it was even extremely, you know, emotional. You know, I found myself getting extremely emotional because, you know, you kind of became the voices for all these children that were nonverbal. You know, weren't able to express a lot of their things and their emotions and what was going on. You know, and as a parent of a special needs child, it really hits home for me personally. But I think it also sends out such an important message, and I think it takes also a lot of guts to put this out there as well. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how this kind of all got started.
All right. Well, I worked, both my wife and I worked in schools that service special needs children for over 10 years. And unfortunately, we saw a lot of abuse and bullying and neglect of special needs children by staff members. And it seemed to be that the majority of times where a student was being abused or bullied or neglected, it was a nonverbal student. So this poor child not only was being mistreated at the hands of people that were supposed to be taking care of the child, but they couldn't even go home and tell their parents or anyone what happened to them. And that's how I got the name of the title of my book. And I reported, you know, numerous incidents of abuse and neglect while I was at different schools. And sometimes the state would come and do an investigation, and sometimes they wouldn't. But I just thought it was important that people were made aware of what can and does go on in some schools today. And I am not saying this goes on in all schools. And one of the things I say in the book, which I want to state right away, is that the majority of the people that work in schools with our special needs children are very, very caring and dedicated. Some of them are not, unfortunately, and even some of the most dedicated and caring people can get burnt out. Sometimes working with some special needs children can be as difficult as it can be rewarding, and it takes a special person. Person has to have compassion and understanding and patience. It's very important. And another thing, Paul, that I talk about in the book, which is so important, is training. That so many people that work in the capacity as personal aides or teacher assistants in schools, whether it be special needs districts or, you know, mainstream schools, are hired to work with these children and really don't have any training in dealing with that child. They don't have an understanding of the child's disability or the child's special needs, and that's a recipe for disaster. It's putting people in the position of trying to care for and educate a child that they have no understanding of. And a quick example is, you know, if many times children with autism, they self-stimulate. They call it stimming. And they'll flap their hands or you know, shake their head back and forth. And that's just how they deal with the stimuli around them. And that's what they have to do to deal with things. And I've seen staff members get upset at that and try to stop a child from doing that and yell at a child for that. And that's just wrong. And if the staff member had the proper training and the understanding of the disabilities of the child that they're working with, you wouldn't have that problem.
Yeah, no, that's really true. And I think, you know, sometimes I think aides or whether teachers, you know, they're trying to break these habits or behaviors, but sometimes certain things you can't. You know, they need to learn how to self-soothe themselves. And like you said, you know.
Yeah. And not only can't change the behavior, Paul, but, you know, in many cases it shouldn't. You know, that all behavior is communicative. I mean, if a child is nonverbal, they have to find other ways of telling you things and other ways of expressing themselves. And if the staff, whether it be the teacher or an aide or an assistant, doesn't understand that, no one is being served there, not the student or the staff.
Right. No, that's very true. You know, and I guess there's different techniques, too, if a child's getting overly excited. Obviously, there's ways to calm them down without using any kind of force or anything, you know, physical from that aspect. Because obviously you don't want a child to hurt themselves. But, you know, I think it is a level of trust. I think once a child trusts that teacher too, and like you said, it takes a very special person to be able to work with children with special needs for sure. But also, like you said, the lack of training. You know, there's some programs out there that don't have enough training in special needs. And and it's amazing because there's, you know, if you go around the country, I mean, obviously, you know, we're from the New Jersey area, which, you know, has probably some of the better programs around the country in general as a whole. However, you know, there's never every school going to follow that same model, you know, and have the same level of education and training and constantly evolving because, you know, it's constantly changing too. You know, kids are changing, the teaching methods are changing slightly, you know, and I think they have to kind of evolve with the child, you know, and I think that's what it is. It's like, it's almost like, you know, having an IEP, every kid's behaviors are going to be different. So they need to really lock in and focus and work with that child at their level, you know, I always said. And I think
exactly. If the methods that a teacher or an assistant constantly is trying and constantly fails, well, then you have to try something different.
Right, because it's not working. You know, not every teaching method is going to work for every child, and it's very obvious. And speaking for personal experience, you know, when my son was first in the program when he was first diagnosed, you know, it was strictly ABA and. You know, all he was doing was getting more upset and more frustrated. And they were basically said, well, you know, he's behavioral. You know, he has behavioral problems. And they basically kicked him out of the program. And we were left with nowhere to go at the time. And it was horrible. And that's happened to so many parents over the years. And it had nothing to do with the child. It was the lack of the training. Because they weren't equipped to deal with children with different levels of the disability and different challenges.
Sure. And, you know, sometimes if a child acts out, and I've seen this numerous times in the different schools that I worked at, if a child acts out, it's a reaction to what the staff either said to that child or did to that child. A big mistake that many people make is if they think, if they know that a child is nonverbal, they assume, for whatever reason, that child doesn't understand what you're saying.
Right, exactly. And
so, I mean, I've seen staff members just say horrible things about a child in front of the child, or about the child's parents, quite frankly, in front of the child, and then the child becomes upset, and then they start yelling at the child, well, which just gets the child more upset, and then sometimes leads to a meltdown, and then they ended up unnecessarily restraining the kid and sticking them in a seclusion room when the whole thing was the staff's fault to begin with.
Right, from the get-go.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And, you know, just because a child is nonverbal doesn't mean that he's not intelligent and doesn't understand what you're saying. And like I said, Paul, I mean, the majority of people that work with these children are wonderful.
Yes,
are wonderful.
Absolutely.
But you have some people that just shouldn't. And I'll give you another example that I talk about in the book. I mean, there was this young boy, Adam. He's actually the first child who has a chapter in the book. He's
right.
The first child I talk about. And he was a nonverbal child with autism, cerebral palsy, and just a wonderful child. But people would just say terrible things in front of him, and it would upset him, and he'd start to act out. Well, whenever I saw him, I'd walk over to him. Hey, Adam, how you doing, buddy? Give me a high five. And he'd stick his hand up and give me a high five. And he'd light up like a Christmas tree. He was so happy that someone would take the time to say hello to him in a nice manner and ask him for a high five. One day, they were pushing him down the hall. They had him strapped into a rifting chair, and they were pushing him down the hall. A teacher's assistant, who later became a teacher, was pushing him down the hall. And I walked up to him, and I said, hey, Adam, how you doing, buddy? Give me a high five. And he got all excited and gives me his high five. And I say to him, I said, boy, Adam, I said, you have such a beautiful smile. And the teacher assistant immediately responded, there is nothing beautiful about this child.
Wow.
And pushed him away.
Oh, my God. I can't.
Now,
I can't
that is it. A person, Paul, that shouldn't be working with these
No,
kids.
No, that's just awful.
And if you can't find beauty in any child, especially a special needs child, there's something seriously wrong with you, quite frankly. And then to say that in front of that child, it's just cruel.
Yeah,
it's just,
you know, they forget that these children have feelings and they do understand. And that's, I think, the biggest misconception is just because, like you said before, a child's nonverbal doesn't mean they don't understand. I've heard so many children later in life all of a sudden, you know, maybe use another form of communication, whether it's a computer or an iPad or something, and all of a sudden they start explaining stories from their childhood to their parents, like, you know, you were talking at me and not to me for
right.
so many years, and it's just like, whoa, you know. And once I heard these stories, it definitely changed me 100%. And, you know, I think the motto is you treat them the same as anybody else, you know, with kindness and love and caring, of course, but you treat them like everybody else, and you talk to them like you talk to anybody else, and you have conversations with them, and maybe you have to repeat certain things if you're working with them, but you know, you have to have, the biggest thing is patience, really. And I think that's one thing that you can't teach, unfortunately, and not everybody, like you said, not everybody should be a teacher.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly. And here's in the book also, Paul, what you were just saying about treating somebody, you know, I say in the book that I have a simple test that school personnel can give themselves to assure that they are interacting with a child in a manner that is appropriate and acceptable. The test involves asking oneself three questions. Number one, if someone was treating me in the same manner in which I'm treating this child, would I be fine with it? Number two, if someone was treating my son or daughter in the manner in which I'm treating this child, would I be fine with it? And number three, if this child's mom and dad were standing there watching me, would I still be treating this child in the same manner? And if you can answer yes to all three of those questions honestly, then I'm sure you're doing fine with the child. But unfortunately, many times people can't answer those questions properly.
Yeah, you could be very right. That's true.
And you just treat somebody like you would want someone to treat yourself, and that should be for all people, not just
absolutely
kids. I mean, that should be for
everyone.
Everybody.
Exactly. Exactly.
And with the training, Paul, you know, some of the districts now are requiring that the teacher aides and teacher assistants, the personal aides and the teacher assistants have 60 college credits now. Whereas before, you know, like when I was hired or my wife was hired, all you needed was a high school diploma.
Wow,
now,
so
one of the schools that we worked at, now they want you to have 60 college credits.
Okay.
Which is nice, but the 60 college credits could be in anything. It doesn't have to be related to the special education field at all.
Oh, wow.
So that's not solving anything. That's not solving anything. So I think that they have to require training, both my wife and I. Her name is Liz, by the way. You've met her. She's a wonderful lady.
Yes.
Both my wife and I worked in organizations in New Jersey that we did respite care for folks like yourself, where, you know, we would come once a week or twice a week and watch your child for 2-3 hours, and you can go out and do whatever you wanted to do, or we would take your child to the park or the library, whatever. But before we were able to do that, we had to go through extensive training, oversight on disabilities, first aid, CPR, bloodborne pathogens, medication administration, I mean, all sorts of things before you even were allowed to do respite work. And I think that schools ought to require that as well. And in regards to what can be done to prevent some of the horrendous things that I talk about in my book, with the technology we have today, you know, put cameras in classrooms.
Right.
Texas actually just recently passed a law that if a parent requests it, the parent has to request it, but if a parent requests it, the school district has to put a camera in that child's classroom. I take it a step farther in my book. I think with the, you know, I'm not the most technologically brilliant person in the world, but I think there should be webcams in the classroom that a dad or mom or dad like yourself, Paul, could have a passcode. And at any time during the course of the day, you can punch in your passcode and you'd be able to watch your child in school.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, and if teachers and assistants knew that at any time mom or dad was going to look in and see what's going on with their child, 99% of the stuff I talk about in my book would go away, because there's no way that
this would go on. Yeah,
that it would go on.
And, you know, and I guess on a flip side, some people say, well, it's invasion of privacy and, you know, all that. But you know what? In reality, you should have nothing to hide. If you're doing the right things, there should be no reason to fear that. And people say, well, it's going to change my teaching style. Well, maybe your teaching style wasn't working, or maybe you're not doing the right teaching style. You know, that's the way I look at it.
I've read articles that would, you know, teachers' unions are opposed to this. Why?
Right.
You know, what do you have to hide? Number one, if you think about it, Paul, it protects the teachers and the staff as much as it does the
kids.
Because if say your son comes home from school with scrapes and bruises on him,
right,
and the staff says, "Well, we didn't do that," and you accuse the staff, well, hey, you know, like they used to say, "Let's go to the video.
Let's go to the tape
and see," and maybe the staff wasn't guilty.
Right.
It protects the staff as much as it does
the kids,
the children.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more on that, Richard, for sure. You know, real quick, I wanted to ask you, you know, when you wrote this, were you afraid of any backlash from anyone? I mean, that's, you know, obviously there's some pretty powerful stories. Were you afraid about that at all, or worried about that?
I was concerned. I wouldn't use the word afraid, because I did it. I knew that there was going to be backlash to myself, and quite frankly, I knew there was going to be backlash to my wife. And there was some, Paul, and obviously many people were not happy when the book was published, but I didn't publish it for them. You know, I published it for the kids. People have to know what can happen to their child while at school, and we have to take measures to change that. And if anyone that got upset with us maybe isn't doing the things that they should be doing, and maybe they should look themselves in the mirror and change the way they are doing things. If this book got nothing but praise all over the country, it's endorsed by numerous special needs organizations. I get emotional, Paul. I was emotional writing the book, and I get emotional. Parents reach out to me and just tell me how it's changed their lives in how they look at their own children now, and how they make sure to protect their children. And I've even had parents tell me, you know, after reading your book, I understand my own child better. I never thought that my child might think the way that you put it in the book.
Yeah.
And so, yes, I was concerned when I wrote it, but it had to be done, Paul.
Yes.
It had to be done.
I give you a lot of props there, because it's a very brave thing to do that, to put this out there, for sure. But like I said, it's so many people have been helped by this, Richard. I mean, you've changed a whole community by putting this out there and opened the eyes of so many people, which is just such a beautiful thing. And like I said, it just changes people's, you know, perspective on things by reading your stories.
Yeah, and it's different. And as a parent, I've had parents tell me that I had a parent that I did respite work for, Paul, whose child went to one of the schools that I worked at where there was problems. The parent started to read my book and put it down and told me that he couldn't read it. It made him too emotional. And plus, then he said to me that he did not want to read it. And I asked him, I said, what do you mean by that? He goes, Rick, he goes, the only rest that I get is the 6 hours when my son is in school. I don't want to know that he may be being mistreated. I don't want to know that someone might be harming him. I can't deal with that. I have to deal with everything else. The other hours of the day, those 6 hours, I need myself. And I said to him, but don't you want to know that your child might be being mistreated in school? He goes, I can't. And that shocked me.
Wow.
That absolutely shocked me. He was the only parent that ever said that to me. But maybe there's other parents out there too that just they don't want to know. They don't want to know. I certainly can't understand that.
No, I wouldn't either. I mean, that's a tough thought to swallow. You know.
Yeah.
I would want to know. That's for sure. So I wanted to ask you now, Rich, on this book, where can people pick up a copy of this book and learn more about it and visit your website? We want to make sure everybody can get that information. Of course, we'll put it on autismradio.org.
Okay. Well, Amazon carries it. Barnes & Noble carries it. A lot of the outlets carry it. If you go, my website is mommyiwish.com. And if you go to mommyiwish.com, there's a purchase link where you can click on that, and there's numerous options of how and where you can get it. It's available both in paperback and in the electronic edition, so you can, you know, download it to your tablet or whatever.
That's great.
I couldn't. I don't know how to do those things. But.
Right. Well, this is such a powerful book, and it's really changing the way, you know, people are viewing their children and the way they're viewing their school programs, and makes you think. It gives you food for thought, you know, because it might have been one of those things you never thought of before. So
Yeah. Real quick thought, I should have mentioned this earlier. I talk about 10 different children in the book. They each have their own chapter, and then after they speak, and that's in quotes, they speak, I talk about them. And what I try to do in their own chapters, I wrote my perception of if they could talk, what they would say. And that's how the book is set up. And it's very unique in that respect. It's my perception of if a child could talk, what they would say and how they would say it and why they would say it. And it makes for an interesting read.
Yeah, it sure does. It's so well written. It's such a powerful story. We thank you so much for sharing us this story and your book with us today. We definitely want to have you come back on another time. Maybe we'll even do a Q&A. People can ask some questions. We'll have you back come on and talk about some of the stories. Something we can do. And we'll put all the information up on the website. And we just want to thank you so much for everything that you do for the special needs community and opening the eyes of so many people.
Thank you, Paul.
That's all the time we have today, folks. We'd like to wish everybody a great week. And remember, until next time, everybody, hope saves the day. Good night, everyone.